Hi, my name is Shirish Dubey. I'm the GPM for the backup product team that includes DPM as well as Azure Backup. And I have a few people with me to help me make this demo happen. I want to first take a moment to thank all of you for coming. I know it's a Friday session, and there's also a session from Mark Rusinovich that's happening at the same time. So all of you guys are here. They really want to know about backup, I hear. So thank you. I'll make sure we make the most of the time you're here. So the people that are helping me with my talk today are Bhaskar Konakanchi, who's a CPS engineer in our team in India. I also have Islam Goma, who's our MVP, who's an expert on the product, has been using the product for many, many years. So if you ask me any hard questions, it's likely I'm going to ask him to answer it. And then I also have a very special guest who's visiting us all the way from Amsterdam. He's Dick Van Brummen. He's the CTO of SAS Plaza. He is here to share his experience with DPM, a very recent experience with DPM. There's three things I want you guys to take away from this session is really how DPM has come a long way from a year ago on how it protects Hyper-V. How many of you guys here actually use DPM? Okay, so can you tell me a year ago, how was DPM to protect Hyper-V? Very bad. Yeah, last time I asked the question, they said if there are eggs, I could throw them at you. It was that bad. I mean, really didn't do a good job with Hyper-V machines at all. So what we did over the last 1 year is really focus on improving how DPM protects Hyper-V virtual machines. And I'll show you a demo of that, which is running on CPS, actually, which is a cloud platform system. So the idea there is reliable at scale. The other thing I want to talk about is we've added features so you can leverage Azure for your scenarios. A lot of companies are looking at scenarios to look at Azure, and clearly one of the scenarios that pops to the top is, can I use Azure for long-term retention? And so we're going to talk about how we have created support for that right away, and how we're going to enhance it going forward to give you full-feature LTR support, and then down the road, archival support as well for backup. And last but not the least, I also want to talk about how we have enhanced DPM to protect workloads, Microsoft workloads running on all clouds. DPM was already known to protect Microsoft workloads running on Hyper-V, like SQL, Exchange, SharePoint, but we have actually extended support to protect them running on VMware, which is the first time we are announcing that, as well as Azure. This was announced a couple of months ago. There's articles on that, but it's the first actually conference we are talking about it. So those are the three things I want you guys to take away from this session. Okay, one request for you. There's a lot of demos. We got about six demos that we are showing. There's a lot of moving parts. So if you have a question that pops up in your head in the middle, please take a note. We'll keep time for questions at the end. Okay, so backup. Backup is an interesting business. People don't generally look at changing backup products unless something else is going on in the infrastructure. That's really what is driving one of the reasons why DPM has become interesting once again. This is around cloud inflection. People are looking at Azure as a new way to leverage that for their infrastructure. And as they do that, they kind of look at all their investments across their tools, and backup is one of the areas they look at changing. So that's sort of one thing that's going on in the environment. The second thing is Hyper-V share. Every year, I know people come to the shows to see how Hyper-V share is doing against the competition. And every year, it gets a little better. So now it's a point where it's credible enough to say people are looking at that to move their workloads to Hyper-V. Again, when they try to move their workloads to a new platform, they look at what other tools are there in their tool chain, and backup is one of the things that pops up. And one of the key advantages that we have with Microsoft is backup is included part of the System Center management suite. So as you adopt Hyper-V and you adopt System Center, you get a backup product that's included, which is something that you don't get in other platforms. You have to buy another backup product to protect your workload. So that's another thing. And the last one is the service provider mindset, both in the service providers themselves, as well as enterprise IT that is sort of becoming more like services, where they prefer to work with a single vendor because of SLAs and predictability. So having all the products for managing their infrastructure coming from one vendor makes their SLA process more predictable, as they call a single neck to choke. So that's also helping people come back to the System Center and saying, can I leverage backup that's already included? So those are the sort of three things that are going on in the marketplace that are making DPM another interesting conversation right now. This is a slide that you might have seen in other sessions as well. This is our overall solution play, if you will, for all the technologies we have for business continuity solutions. So you'll see all the way from failover clustering down here, and then you go around, you say you start with backup on the server, then you use DPM, which is an enterprise backup. You can also extend that protection to Azure, and then you have disaster recovery solutions where you can orchestrate a disaster recovery between your two data centers, as well as disaster recovery between your on-premise infrastructure and Azure. So that's really our overall solution play for business continuity. And obviously, I'll focus a lot more on this stuff here on the side, which talks about backup. And I'm sure you guys attended other sessions where they do drill downs of that. All my colleagues basically must have presented these things. Since it's the last day, you all have this backup with all that's left. Just a quick sort of scan as to what is our sort of strategy to address backup. So we believe that this is the evolution that's going on in the infrastructure. You're starting from physical, there is enough movement to virtualize the infrastructure, and then from virtualizing infrastructure, people are toying around with a hybrid scenario where they want to move parts of the infrastructure to the cloud, public cloud that is, and then all the way to the extreme where they want to move their entire infrastructure into the cloud. So that's the whole spectrum of evolution that the infrastructure is evolving. And the main point I want to highlight is that we provide a backup solution that works across all these scenarios. Okay. So now I'll switch into what specific areas that I wanted to highlight earlier. The first one is around protecting Hyper-V at scale. So I'll cover what we are doing for CPS. You guys all know about CPS by now? Yeah? Okay. So that's the backup product in CPS, both to protect the CPS cluster as well as the tenant VMs is DPM. I'll also talk about backup and deduplication at scale. And one of the features that we have added is what I call enterprise class reporting. I'll talk about that as well. This is how you can get better reporting capabilities from DPM at scale. Okay, here's a quick overview of what CPS looks like. Let me fast forward this. Okay. So what I want to say is there are two elements that we protect in CPS. One is the management cluster itself. This is to ensure that whenever there is an outage or there is a corruption or anything that you want to do as an admin to manage the rack, that you can restore back to a consistent point in time. So that's all the elements that you see up in the box here that we protect. And the color coding here is like the infra clusters like ADDNS, then there's system center components, then there's WAP, and there's SQL DBs that store all the metadata for all the components. These are all the components we need to protect. Obviously, since DPM relies on AD, we need to have another backup product protect AD, which is Windows Server Backup. So we use that to protect AD, and the rest of the components are protected using DPM. And down below is your compute cluster where all your tenant VMs are running. And this is where you have, in a single rack, 8 DPM servers protecting about 1,200 VMs that we're showing a demo of. But at capacity, we're going to have 2,000 VMs per rack. And the full stamp with 4 racks is going to have 8,000 VMs. So we'll have 32 DPM servers running in the entire stamp to protect all your tenant VMs. So this doesn't get any bigger in terms of scale. So what do you get in CPS from backup? So as I said earlier, it's a pre-configured DPM environment along with dedupe-enabled storage. So your storage consumed is very, very optimal. The next, I talked about that. The management cluster is pre-configured to be protected. And the DPMs in the tenant VM setup is pre-configured to give you a predictable daily SLA. And one of the things that we worked on very hard, which is something that I'm sure those of you guys have managed infrastructure outside, spend a lot of time trying to get things back in order if things go out of control or something gets out of whack. This is like all the components in your management fabric. So we have spent a lot of time making sure that you can always get back to a sane state if something goes wrong. We have done a lot of automation. There's a lot of runbooks in the product, in the CPS that allow you to bring the, what I call fabric, back to a consistent state. And all of these components that you see up there, we have worked together to build that capability in CPS. This is one of the big values you get when you buy CPS. And of course, we have provided a central console for you to manage all of their DPM activity in this data center. And as I mentioned, we have included a lot of automation in CPS as well. One of them is when you get new VMs provisioned, there's a script that you can use that runs that adds them to the right protection group. There's also cleanup. If you remove things, delete VMs, it cleans up those things. You have scripts to manage backup intent across these servers. Depending on SLA, you can change that, vary that. All those things are provided in the runbook. and also exclusion list. So these are all the things that are provided in CPS to do automation. Okay, all of the stuff that I showed you in CPS, it actually works at scale at a non-CPS Hyper-V deployment as well. The only thing that is specific to CPS right now is all the automation scripts you have written. And even those, our plan is to actually make them generic and give parameters to it, so you can run it in a deployment which you see on the left. This is your traditional DPM deployment that I'm sure most of you guys are doing today, where you have a compute cluster that is running a SAN as a backend for storage. This is what you have today. So all the stuff that I showed you earlier will work in this environment as well. So you do get Hyper-V VMs at scale at that environment. The picture on the right is more of what is there in CPS. What you see here is the way CPS is architected. You have a compute cluster, then you have a JBOD-based storage cluster called the SSU that down below. So you can get reliable VM backups at scale in both these deployments. The one cool thing that you also get is deduplication. Now, deduplication is more relevant to the picture on the right, because most of the time when you're using a SAN for production storage, you're using a SAN with high-end IOPS that typically comes with inbox deduplication in the SAN. But if you use a deployment to the right, which you might consider doing for reducing your backup storage, cost of your backup storage, then this environment typically doesn't come with deduplication. You typically have to either do it yourself or live without it. So in this deployment, either you can use a JBOD or what I call a traditional low-end SAN that doesn't come with either replication or deduplication. And in that, you can leverage Windows deduplication that comes in it. And that's what you saw on CPS as well. The CPS is a setup like this. Okay, deduplication is something that we are still revising the guidance on it. You want to make sure that when you deploy it, you get all the benefit that you get out of it, which you'll see today. But there are some things you need to be concerned about. First of all, the DPM server has to be run virtualized. You have to have the latest version of DPM, which is actually not the latest, the one before the latest. The latest one released this week, actually, UR4. You have to have UR3. And as far as deduplication, actually not a feature of DPM per se. It's a feature of the Windows Server stack that we use. And that has updates as well that we have worked with the dedupe team to fix it. And all of those fixes will be available for in the, I guess the date I remember, if I'm not mistaken, is November 11th, is when all the roll-ups go out for Windows Server. So you need that update as well as DPM UR3. And each of the VHDs you have to set up. So the VHD that you attach to the DPM server for storage cannot be more than a terabyte. That's the current limitation. We want to increase that down the road. This is how you get the most out of deduplication. You can definitely put a lot more VMs into a VHD. Yeah, 1 terabyte is a pretty big number, but that's how many VHDs you need to have. So your scale factor depends on how much storage you want to protect. So if you, let's say, have 32 terabytes of storage you want to protect, you'll need to put 32 disks onto a single DPM server. On Hyper-V, the tested limit is around 30, even though the stated support limit is you can attach 64 disks to a Hyper-V server. But I think most of the testing that we recommend people is to not do more than 30. That's what you see in CPS as well. So we'd recommend that's how you scale the DPM servers you need to do deduplication. And again, like I said, all of what I just said is going to be available in a detailed TechNet article, which we plan to publish next month. Okay, now I want to switch and have my colleague here show you a demo of CPS. And let me do 7, right?
Yeah, I think 7.
You need to extend it.
Oh.
Or duplicate it. Extend it, actually, yeah. No, you need to do duplicate it, actually. Otherwise, you won't be able to see it.
Okay.
Do a control P. Yes, P. Let me move this back here. Why don't you set it up?
How do I duplicate it? It's a
minimize this.
This thing is
a little bit of trouble here.
Okay.
control P is not working. Oh, Windows P.
Okay.
All right. You guys can hear me? So I'm going to show like a CPS rack. What we have is a CPS rack here. Currently, you're seeing, looking at at the compute cluster. We have 1,250 VMs running on the compute cluster. There are 8 tenant DPM servers that are protecting these 1,250 VMs. These 1,250 VMs, we have like workloads, different various workloads running. Like 500 of these are running IOMeter profile. 400 of them are using TPCE workload, SQL TPCE. 300 of them are using information worker. So average churn, like no net churn on this, like per VM is 5%. 5% churn we are actually doing. So let me quickly show you like we have like 8 tenant DPM servers. So I'm going to show you like one of the DPM servers to show like, you know, how the backups are going on that particular DPM server. So this is a DPM console. I connected to one of the DPM servers. We have this DPM server is protecting 125 VMs. As you can see, the data source health looks all green. Everything is okay. Let's go and take a quick look at how the backups are running for last couple of days. I created some custom filters here just to look at, like, you know, on a daily basis how the backups are happening. As you can see, we have 100% successful backups in the last these 3 days. Okay, so so let me quickly talk about the storage that we have here, right? Like Shrish mentioned, we have about 144 TB of triple mirrored tenant storage. This is all the tenant storage, out of which we are actually consuming 81 TB of space. The current 1250 VMs are consuming 81 TB of space. This is just the tenant storage. We have a separate storage for backup. It is like it's a dual parity, double parity storage. We have about 115 TB of storage available for backup. So we are to store 81 TB of tenant storage plus 7 days of backup history. Like you would need about like 109 TB of backup space. Okay, so let's quickly take a look at like, you know, how we are doing on the backup side. So right now you're looking at the tenant shares here. So I'm going to quickly take you to the backup shares. Okay, so these are all the backup shares we have. So like you see, the deduplication ratings we are getting are like ranging from 70 to 90% on each this thing. So if I add up all the actual space that we are using on the backup side, right, it comes out to 16 TB. So we are storing 109 TB of storage onto 16 TB because with the help of Windows deduplication that we leveraged on this particular rack. So with that, I'll conclude my session. Thanks, Rish.
Yeah, one of the things that that I think I want to also add to what he said is the workloads that are running in these VMs, some of them are simulated I/O using IOMeter that are simulating what I/O is running in these workloads. But half of the VMs are actually running what they call information workload and SQL with profiles that are generating actual data, which is not simulated I/O. So that's actually where you can see real transactions, real data that you might see in the virtual machine. So if you have pure virtual machines, the dedupe ratios you're going to get is going to be pretty high, especially if it's simulated I/O. So some of the 90% numbers, I don't want you guys to walk away thinking that's what you're going to get all the time. But clearly, there are half the VMs out here are real workloads. And there you could reasonably expect around 70% or so savings is what I would normally expect people to have in their minds. That's what you saw on some of the machines. You did see that. Okay. So let me switch back. Thanks, Bhaskar.
Yeah.
Okay. So the next feature I want to talk about is reporting. So how many of you guys know about reporting features in DPM? Okay. You guys like it? Okay. Good. It's the right answer. Well, it works for what it's designed for. It works for a single DPM server where you want to see a set of things that DPM is doing from a dashboard perspective. But what we have found from customers is, A, they have many DPM servers, which they need to collate all the information. Second, it's like one of those things with reporting. You will never get one size fits all. There's something somebody else wants to do differently. Some CIO has a requirement that I like the colors this way, or I like pie charts, and I don't like bar charts. So a lot of times people come back with requirements that say they need to keep changing it. So those are the two big things that we looked at and say, how can we make it better? What could we do differently? And one of the other things that we want to also do is enable our MVP community out there to also build value on top of DPM. We want our partners and MVPs to actually build value on our reporting infrastructure. So what we went out to do is to create a framework where we'll give you all the information that is there in all the DPM servers, and we'll populate them into the SCOM data warehouse. And then we will show you a sample report of how you could leverage that, but that's not to anybody that is used SQL reporting, SSRS, those are not very difficult things to go do. What people are doing was reverse engineering all of that because we hadn't documented the views, and people are looking through our tables to figure out what it is that we were storing in DPM. So what we have done is made that all available for people to go modify and suit their needs. So the three things that we want to do is make it customizable, and that's one thing that people said they wanted. Second was aggregation, where you want to make sure you can pull in reports from all the DPM servers. And the third is around flexibility. For example, you may want to add some data into the reporting that's not part of the DPM server. And one such example is what I'll show you in the chart next, is dedupe. Dedupe actually is something that runs on the file server. It's not data that's there in the DPM server. But we can actually add scripts to go query the mompack for file server and populate the data into the SCOM data warehouse. So from a reporting perspective, you see all of what you're looking for. And then you can, of course, add scripts that you want. And then adding SQL queries, the report that I'll show you is actually something we'll open source as well, so you guys can modify it. So here's a rough framework that I just talked about. So on the left, you could have a farm of DPM servers that generate reports or alerts, if you will. And all of those reports are configured with SCOM. Now, since DPM is sold as part of System Center, you already have a SCOM deployment with it. So that's already infrastructure that's in place. And then what we have done is build a reporting pack that we're going to pull all these reports into the SCOM data warehouse. And these are the views that you see at the bottom. These are all the views that you see that we have currently documented. And again, this is something that we are not ready to release yet. This is something that we plan to release with the next update roll-up of DPM, which is expected to be in January. So we're going to have that release then. So in the meantime, some of these views may change, but you get the rough idea. The main concept is we don't want to hold back any information. We want to populate this SCOM data warehouse with all the reporting views that we can do. And then we have written some scripts to generate the reports. And here's an example of a report that you could get. I had a picture of this blow up on my booth. I don't know how many guys saw that. Anybody saw that? Okay. Yeah, one guy walked up and said, yeah, that looks like a CIO report. That's what my CIO likes to see. This looks like the right kind of information. It shows what my SLA performance is. It shows me how I'm doing on deduplication. It shows me all the data sources I'm protecting. And these are all the things that you would want to look at. How I'm utilizing bandwidth, how much data I transferred, what are the top failure reasons. And you can have some controls at the top where you can filter based on time and the number of servers you can use. So that's roughly what you could do. And I'll show you a demo of how easy it is to use.
Hi. In this video, I'm going to show you how the new enhanced reporting for DPM feature works and how you can use it. Over here, I have set up a server with SCOM, along with SCOM's reporting feature, as you can see on the screen. I have already imported the existing DPM management packs, which have discovered the existing DPM servers in my environment. These DPM servers are FAHD-DEV-11 and FAHD-DEV-06. Now I am going to import a new management pack that has been created for this feature into the SCOM server. So as you can see, we have created a new management pack called reporting, and this management pack enables the enhanced reporting for DPM feature. I'm not going to actually import this management pack right now because I have already imported it on this machine, but this is just to illustrate how simple it is to start using this feature. Once this management pack gets imported, it creates a new namespace in the Operations Manager Data Warehouse DB and then creates a set of views inside this namespace. Let me show you. So as you can see, we have created a new namespace called SCDPM, and there are a set of views that are created inside this namespace. These views get populated by data by a set of rules that are present in the management pack. These rules fire at a regular interval and populate the data that can be accessed through these views. Also, the data is cleaned up and deleted at a regular interval when it gets old. This is how you get your data in the SCOM data warehouse, on top of which you can build your reports. A point to note is that this feature is still in development right now, so the list of views that you see here is not complete and it is also subject to change. Now, to demonstrate the power of these views and how you can create your reports on top of these views, we have created a sample report on this machine, and the development environment we have used to create this report is SQL Server Data Tools. So as you can see, we are in SQL Server Data Tools right now, and we are viewing the report that has data fetched from the SCOM data warehouse. It's very simple to create a report using this tool. It's only a matter of drag and drop controls and then write SQL queries to fetch the data to populate these controls. To give you a demonstration of this, let me go ahead and change this report a little bit and show you how easy it is to do this. On your screen, you can see a pie chart that shows the number of offline and online tapes in our environment. Let us go ahead and add the number of free tapes in our environment to this pie chart. The pie chart fetches its data from a data set called tape utilization, and I'm going to add the query that fetches free tapes into this data set. So here is that simple query that just fetches the relevant data from the data warehouse. I'm going to save this report, and then I will use SQL Server Data Tools preview feature to see how my report shows up. There it is. And now you can see that we also have included free tapes in our environment to this report. Thank you very much for watching this video.
Okay, as I mentioned, this is the second topic I want to drill down into, which is what is the scenario for protection to Azure? So I talked about Hyper-V at scale. This is around protecting to Azure. So the key feature that we want to talk about is long-term retention. Okay, so the key scenario that we want to highlight is what do you want to use Azure for when you are a backup, in the backup context? And the thing that comes to mind is the tapes. Tapes seems to be the first scenario to look at. Hey, can I use the public cloud for that? So this is a question that I want to ask you guys. How much do you guys think a total cost of ownership for a gigabyte of tape per month would be? Any guesses? Now remember, this is not cost of just tapes. This is overall cost of ownership, the entire tape process. Well, it's 95 cents a gig is what is reported by a survey from Gartner. And they have a model, I'll show you on this next slide, that shows you how they have computed this cost. And if you just contrast that to what it costs to save data on Azure with our current pricing as of October 1st, which is the raw storage cost is 20 cents a gig, then you add the same management cost that Gartner adds up, it comes to 28 cents a gig. So it's a fairly competitive and a compelling offering to say, hey, should I look at Azure as a long-term retention target? And here's the table that they have, that they put up on their report. All of you that have access to Gartner can go get that. This is the report that they compute. So the column on the first column is how they compute cost for tape. And if you notice, the biggest cost driver is the administrative cost. It's right here. That's what they cost, is $20 an hour, and they roughly estimate in a year's time you'd have about 2,400 hours. And if they've estimated it at 9 terabytes per year, and this is the total cost, they divide it by 9 terabytes, that's how you get about a dollar. And then this is what they have looked at, survey of cloud backup pricing, and they have compared it to the same model on the left. And again, their key quote is that although tape media is inexpensive, the cost of ownership for tapes is really all the other soft costs that go along with tape storage. And this is where Azure Backup fits in. This column is around, I've done the same math to see how do I compare Azure Backup pricing to this table. And you can see we fell well within the range of the total cost of ownership for tape. So if there's a single scenario I'd like to impress upon you to look at Azure, given our backup story and the backup scenario for cloud, I would really seriously ask you guys to look at this analysis and do a similar analysis for your business. Obviously, it may not be exactly the same. You know, your tape vendor, your tape cost may be different. But yeah, this is a good sort of framework for you to go look at. Okay, so this is the overall feature that we are building. So what we released in last month, actually, between DPM and Azure Backup is our ability to restore points to store your incremental. So before that, you could only store up to 120 points, 120 days rather. So each backup point was one recovery point, and you could only have 120. So what we have done is we've allowed you to stretch that depending on your frequency of retention. So if you want to still do daily backup, you still get 120 days. But let's say you want to do weekly backups. In that case, you can get an extended retention range, which could go up to 2 years. And the way to do the math is all with the 120 thing. So you have all the recovery points are always 120. But if you, let's say, take a weekly backup, you multiply that by 7, and that's how many backups you can get. So you can extend that to 840, and the same thing for monthly. You can basically take that 120 points and stretch that to say once every 4 weeks I get a backup. So you have that many more backups. So 120 times 4 times 7 gives you that number. So that's how you get the math of retention. Now, this is the first version of the release. As you can see, you can either do daily, weekly, or monthly, and you can only go up to 9 years. So what we're going to release early next year is an ability to mix these two. So you could have some dailies, some monthlies, some yearlies, which is typically what customers want. So that's going to come. But right now, you can do this already. And the other cool thing I want to mention is if you have a customer that wants to start using this capability and they set up a retention schedule with the current UX, when we have the new release, we're going to automatically migrate you to the new setup. So you don't have to do re-protection or re-IR or any of those things. We'll simply age the points into the new scheme so you can seamlessly move into what we call a GFS scheme. That's going to come early next year. Okay, in addition to some of the LTR features, we have also done other capabilities in Azure Backup. The first one is increasing the data source limit. This is not the amount of data Azure Backup can protect. This is the amount a single data source that is there that is being protected cannot be bigger than this. Right? That's the first thing we did. It used to be 850 gigabytes. We have increased, we have doubled it to 1.65. We have also added support for all 64-bit servers all the way down to 2008. That's the other thing we did. Expanded availability to both China and Australia. And we are in the process of doing these two things, which is adding import-export and express out. These are essentially things that you need when you want to send large amounts of data to Azure. So import-export would be something you would use when you want to send disks to Azure. Your initial replication takes a long time. So this is where customers might want to use import-export, where they copy the data to a disk, they send the disk to Azure, Azure copies the data into their account, and then Azure Backup will move the data into the Azure Backup Store. This will go a lot faster than sending the data over a slow link. The other more enterprise-class customers are using ExpressRoute or thinking of using ExpressRoute. This is the thing that if you guys saw Equinox on the booth, they have a high-speed connection to Azure. If you use that, we want to leverage that as well. This is, again, to send the initial copy of the data. And if you have a lot of servers that you want to protect, today the experience for Azure Backup is on each server, which doesn't scale if you have many servers. So what we're also doing is building a central management console in Azure that you can actually monitor these consoles and monitor backup, just like you do DPM on-premise. That's the capability is also being built right now. Okay. So let's see if this demo works. Long-term retention. So I'm going to show you this.
In this demo, we will look at how DPM to Azure can provide you offset capability that can retain data for longer periods. For the sake of the demo, I have already created a protection group where I am protecting a file system to a local disk. Now we will see how to enable protection for Azure and how to retain for longer periods. So this is the PG I have, and I am creating add online protection here, and I'm selecting the data. So this is one of the important capabilities that DPM to Azure have, where you can pick and choose which particular data sources, either DBs, file systems, VMs, you name it. You can pick and choose which kind of data sources should go to Azure and which one should just remain online, on-prem. So here I selected this file system, and then I'm selecting here. One of the important things is about the retention range. By daily backups, you can retain it for 120 days, or for a weekly backup, which you can do it for once a week, or once in 2 weeks, once in 3 weeks, or once in 4 weeks. If you choose once in 4 weeks, you can go up to 3,360 days, which is more than 9 years. Or if you choose once a week, you can retain it up to 840 days. Everything is revolving around the 120 recovery points. In this case, I am specifying once in 4 weeks, and I want to retain it for the maximum possible, which is 3,360 days. And I can specify which day of the week I want to back up. And in this case, I'm selecting Saturday, and I'm specifying what time I want to back up. And I am removing the 9 p.m. So I want to back up once every 4 weeks for at 1 o'clock in the morning and on Saturday, and retain it for 3,360 days. This is the long-term capability that we have introduced, where you can store the data for longer, you can retain them for longer periods using DPM to Azure.
So, okay, I want to switch into protecting Microsoft workloads on other cloud. This is the third thing I'd mentioned in the slide that I started the presentation with, protecting Hyper-V at scale, showing how you can leverage Azure, and how we protect, the third one is how we can protect Microsoft workloads running on other clouds such as VMware and Azure. So for this demo, actually, this is mostly going to be a demo, and I'll have Islam actually drive that. He's the one that is prepared the demo on his setup. So I'll have him walk through the demo with you. So this is the two things that he's going to demo. And this is the setup for VMware, where you have an ESXi setup. And these are the workloads that we are currently tested to be supported. And they are being protected by a DPM server. Both the DPM server as well as the workload server are actually running in a VMware environment. And I will switch to the demo now.
All right. Thanks, Shirish. So I'd like to take 2 minutes to thank the DPM team for doing all of that. What's happening is this is maybe the result of 4 months hard working, link and messages and all kind of, hate and love between us and them working on all of this. So if you please, guys, just give Shirish and DPM team a big applause for me, because it's really hard work from them. We have been really working close with them, and this is very good. Getting VMware supported in a client perspective and Azure from IS perspective, that you'll have maybe kind of, you're having your server room in Azure, and you're all your working remotely. That's really great. Plus also, I want to mention that we already have supportability today for SQL 2014 always on, either always on standalone or always on SQL cluster. I will show you the demos today on VMware and IaaS Azure. And after that, I'll give the demo again, give the control to Shirish. So today, actually, I do have two VMs, one VM for the DPM. And the DPM today, you can actually have it as a virtual machine hosted on VMware environment. Then I'll show you here in my demo that I already have this DPM console that already have a VMware disks. And now there is nothing stop you if you have a, this kind of VMware environment. Go ahead and launch your DPM server on this environment and it will be able to support you 100%. And also this is, just show, this is actually the VMware manufacturer. We have been trying to back up some workload and we always choose SQL because this is kind of a sensitive workload that everyone has it. So we have been actually backing up, if I just go back to DPM server here, we have been backing up some databases, right? And I won't waste your time for that because we know, we have been using DPM now for 10 years. And we know that actually for all the workload of Microsoft works, except that it was sometimes Hyper-V. But now I think actually with the UR4 and UR3, everything is cool. So after actually we have restored database, which actually will big data, on from the DPM back to its place on SQL Server. And just if we run the DBC check on database, it will say, okay, I'm good, everything is fine. So that shows actually, okay, your workload is good. It's not corrupted and everything good. So my second demo for you guys is, which is interesting stuff that actually we had to talk. We talked about this during Tech Ed North America. Anyone attended Tech Ed North America? No? Anyone use SQL always on in his environment? All right, fantastic. So this is actually for you guys, actually tell you that we are running now a cluster environment in Azure. We have actually Node 1 and Node 2. SQL 300, let me show you this in here. We have SQL 300 and SQL 400, those are actually two SQL belong to one cluster that actually have databases on always on. So what we have done is we actually went ahead and backed up these databases. So if I go to, first let me show you, it's actually in here. So we have an availability group, multiple availability group, when actually sales and marketing and so on. But one of the most important things that I would like to tell you, and not too much people they know, that if you're a DBA and you set up the backup, the preferred backup, and always on to be secondary or primary, all, DPM will honor this. We'll go say, okay, the DBM said so, I will follow that, right? So you don't really need to go back and forth between you and DPM and a DBA to tell him what's happening. Should I backup this? Should I backup that? What do you want? Whatever he decide, we'll back it up. So I go DPM again, protection. And if I go to my always on, as I said, actually now we have with UR4, it's very important to download this UR4, your update rollup 4, in order to be able to back up your always on 2014. So this 2014, and you see actually it's between these two nodes. So this is a really great features that actually now supported, and I believe actually DPM will be always hand-to-hand with the product team. Once they ship the new version, DPM will be able to protect it. Once Exchange ship the new version, DPM will be protected, right? So with that, I think actually I finished my demos in less than 5 minutes. To give my dear friend Dick some time to talk, to go through his stuff. Other than that, the workload, please go ahead and install the UR4. It has a lot of fixes, and actually it will allow you to go with always on. Thank you.
Okay. Let me switch back. Hey, thanks, Islam.
No problem.
By the way, you guys did notice, right? It was running on VMware. Did you show them the little VMware icon?
Yeah, I did actually. if you go back here, so we went through the MSN info, right? And went here, said actually the VMware Inc. like this. And actually the VM, the famous VMware icon and taskbar in here in the bottom. Let me just move this thing.
All right.
Right there.
You guys trust us on that. We are running it on VMware.
Please.
Okay, let me switch back to the demo. Actually, I want to switch. We're a little running a little tight on time, so I want to invite Dick on stage to talk about his experience on DPM. I had another demo to show you. If there's time after that, I'll show you guys that, but looks like we're running tight on time. I want to make sure I give Dick at least 15 minutes to talk. Then I can come back and show you the demo. Thank you, Dick.
Thank you, Shrish. Can everybody hear me well? Okay. My name is Dick van Brummen. I'm CTO of SAS Plaza. And if we look at SAS Plaza, basically we can tell that we are the number one Microsoft Dynamics cloud provider in the world. We are serving ERP clouds all over the world through Microsoft Dynamics partners. We've been busy with that for now about 5 years, and year over year we grow 100%. And what really our leading edge technology is that we provide an ecosystem around ERP Dynamics applications, where we basically, instead of 12 hours where engineers are deploying a Navision or a AX system, we deploy in minutes. So we do that in a very large scale and against very high SLA uptime guarantees. Because if you look to problems in a cloud infrastructure, 90% of the problems always arise in the application rather than on the infrastructure, which means that an application availability of 99.9% is crucial for our end customers. So if we look to our global reach, we're basically available in three regions, in multiple data centers, and also in Azure data centers. So through provisioning processes, our partners can determine whether they want to go to private cloud or to public cloud, and it's just through the provisioning panel that we can enable those applications. So we are having our offices in San Diego, Amsterdam, and Singapore, multiple data centers, and certified against the highest possible certification processes. So if you look to backup, especially in a large-scale environment, you will have several enemies, so to speak. We're talking about around 5,000 VMs, and we used to use in the early days DPM for different ways. And when it came to Hyper-V backup in the early days, we had to deviate from DPM simply because the quality was not good enough at that time. So there are a few important things there. First of all, the day is 24 hours. I cannot make any more hours there, so my backup window should really fit within the 24 hours. Basically, we reserve 10 hours for that. And if we want to fit in large-scale amount of data and make backup out of it, DDoP is very important as a feature. And as you all know, in the early days, DDoP was not part of DPM. Which led me into another direction if you talk about backing up Hyper-V VMs. So I put in this placeholder, not that I don't like Einstein. Everything he said, and especially his quotes, are very interesting. But if you present for Microsoft, you go through a certain process. So if I put everything in the slides, they might kick out what I put there. So that's the reason for me to put this slide in. A year ago, we were part of the project team of CPS, and I had about 12 leading engineers of Microsoft in my workshop room. And I explained that I really had to incorporate a different backup product for VMs on CPS. And of course, that's not a really good answer if you're sitting there in a Microsoft environment with all the Microsoft people. And I said, yesterday I spent €500,000 for a competing product just because
I have to have uptime in my SLA and I have to have backups. And I said, simply, the DPM product is a shitty product. And suddenly a guy stood up in that room and he said, I'm the manager of that shitty product. And that was Fries. So that was a very interesting statement. I'm always very blown to Microsoft because I want to keep them sharp and to think in what way they can really leverage on, say, customers they're having and service providers with, say, very critical questions. So I gave him a couple of leading points which he had to solve, and I promised him, if you can solve this within 2 years, I will support your product again, and I will implement it also in my large-scale environments. So a month ago, after 11 months, he came to me and he said, Dick, I want to hold you on what you said in that room. So basically, there were three aspects very important for me at that time. One was reliability of DPM in large scale, because I don't have the time in such a big environment to really put a lot of operations onto the results of the DPM backups. A second point, which was very important, is deduplication. Because without deduplication in my environment, I'm spending large amounts on storage layers, which I don't want, especially not for the backup storage. And the third point is the time it consumes for me to make a backup. So if I look to the results of my previous backup solution, which I'm, by the way, not allowed to mention the name of, because otherwise Fries is getting fired, but I can tell you this, it has an environmental-friendly logo. So those two items, time and deduplication, is key for my large-scale environment. So we did some tests there. So if we look to the previous solution, basically what we saw, we run 44 VMs with a total of 1.5 terabytes, and that backup runs in 10 hours. Basically, that's consuming all the time I reserved for my backup. And the more it consumes, the more servers I need for my backup and the more groups I have to create. And that's what I don't want. I would like to have a shorter backup time, consume backup more VMs, and have less DPM servers in place. So if we then see to the DPM backup run, what we did was we did 61 VMs with 3 terabytes of storage, and we even did more backups in 3 to 4 hours' time. And then people in our department, especially the infra department, are getting smiles on their faces, right? Because that's really important. It created 7 VHDX files and consuming 4.68 terabytes of storage. But now the interesting part. The interesting part is that we created, on average, 74% DDoP ratio. And only in one data center, that is saving me between 150 and 200 terabytes of storage, which we all know is valuable. If you look to a service provider nowadays in primary storage and backup storage, those are the two most important cost factors. Because you see density on compute. I mean, if I see cost pricing on compute, it's going down and down, and you can get more VMs on it. But storage is exploding in our business, especially in ERP, where people are not asking only a month backup, but perhaps some countries even say that they need for 10 years backup. Just imagine what that does with your storage layer. So we are very glad that Fries and his team helped us. And I must say, I must be honest, I'm very critical to the Microsoft organization always. They don't always like that. But I always come back if they've cracked the nut and really put their efforts in getting a stable product. Not only that, but really he did a better job than I expected him to do. So again, I don't want to ask for a second applause, but I must say that Shreeves did an outstanding job here, and I'd like to thank you to invite me here on stage. And I'm more than willing to answer some questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, Dick.
Yeah.
Thanks again for coming. I hope we have many more happy customers like that as we go forward. Let me see, Archie, we might be able to show you a demo. I don't want to take chances with my demo, so I'm just going to show you a video, actually. I apologize for that. The demos aren't working as well as I thought. So let's see if the video works. What happened?
Wait a minute. You need this one. I will help you out.
There you go. Thank you.
Why is it stopped?
Hi.
It's okay.
Today we are going to look at a demo of Azure IaaS virtual machines getting backed up. We start with a running SQL Server.
Okay. Let me set this demo. So what this is a sneak preview of protecting IaaS VMs in Azure. This is a demo that Islam showed you was DPM running in an IaaS VM. That is protecting workloads running on Azure IaaS VM. What this sneak preview is about, ability to protect an IaaS VM at a fabric level. So you can actually today only take snapshots of IaaS VMs. This is what we are trying to build. The initial capability will show you how we use snapshots and still your VM can keep running. That's the current capability, doesn't allow you to do that. And then we're gonna also add, of course, all the UX and the console. This is a PowerShell-based demo. And it's, like I said, it's gonna be ready by early next year. So that's the preview of taking a backup of an IaaS VM. Okay.
And some data, that is, a few databases and some tables. Before we start the backup job itself. Hi, today we are going to look at a demo of Azure IaaS virtual machines getting backed up. We start with a running SQL Server virtual machine. This virtual machine has got the SQL Server software and some data, that is, a few databases and some tables. Before we start the backup job itself, let's ensure that the server is up and running all through the backup job. For that, we will set up a continuous ping session. Right, now that we have a ping session going with the SQL Server, let's start the backup. The reason that this demo is important is because of the limitations of the virtual machine backup today in Azure. Today, the VM needs to be shut down to get application consistent VSS snapshots. And this is not a feasible solution for virtual machines in production. What you are seeing on the screen now is a capability that allows you to get app-consistent VSS snapshots without having to shut down the VM. The process of taking the backup will take about a minute, and you should see the latest app-consistent recovery point about a minute or two after the backup has started. Let's wait for that to come on. We are almost done, and as you can see, all through we have the ping session going where the SQL Server is not being shut down. It's continuously responding to the ping session that is happening. All right, the backup was started at 8:38 a.m. and you have the latest recovery point at about 8:39, about a minute or so after the original backup was started. Now, in case there is loss in the running SQL Server, you can now restore from the recovery points that have been created. Let us start the test restore for this virtual machine. What we are going to do is create an alternate virtual machine that's going to be based on the recovery point that has just been taken. Let us now start the restore. All right. While the restore process takes its time, let's connect to an existing virtual machine that was created from one of the older restore points. The restored VM has the same software, the same credentials, and the same data at the time that the recovery point was created. And you can check the application consistency of the SQL Server database by running dbcc-checkdb. Let's go to the older restored VM and see what actually happens. Right. Now, this is the older restored VM, and as you can see, it has the same kind of database and the tables that were there in the original VM. Let us run dbcc-checkdb and see what happens. When you actually scroll down to the end, you will find that it says that there were no consistency errors in the database. Now, this is the way to actually check for app consistency. So we know that the older restored VM that was taken in the same way that you just saw is absolutely app consistent. Let's go back to the restore process and see what is happening there. All right. So the restore process has taken, again, about a minute to finish. And it would have created a new VM by the name restored VM31. Let's go back to the Azure portal and see what is happening. As you can see, there is a new virtual machine called restored VM31 that has been started. By the time this virtual machine comes up, which takes about 5 to 10 minutes in Azure, you will see the same kind of software, the same data, and all the same consistency that is expected from backup of SQL servers that is done on-prem, right? And now you will be able to log in based on this credential and use it like just any other VM. Yeah. We now have a way to take app-consistent VSS snapshots of Azure VMs without shutting them down. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Well, we have a few minutes for questions if somebody had. Look, one quick thing, though. What I showed was a demo that's running in PowerShell, obviously. This is just taking the initial snapshots of the VM, and then it's going to do a restore on that. You showed the restore to another server. Obviously, when you're doing backup, you want to restore it to the original location where the data was. So that's another cap that's going to get built as we go. And, of course, there's going to be a whole experience around that, so you won't have to run PowerShell. So pretty much all of that is what we're going to go build and allow you that capability to protect back ISVMs from at a fabric level. Okay, these are all the contents. This is the last day, so there's no point me referring you to this content, but if you look at the session later on, these are all the content that is related to business continuity. There's one session that's unfortunately missing on here, which should be, the deduplication session. There's one going on right now, overlapping with me, but there's another one this afternoon. Do you know the number for that, approximately? Yeah, there's a session in the afternoon that you guys can see where the deduplication team is presenting not just what they do for backup storage, but for other scenarios as well. So if you have time, please go attend that session. B358. Same room. So, all right. Any questions anybody had for any of us here? Or actually for deduplication also. He's the GPM for deduplication, so. Okay, any questions that you guys have that I can help answer, or any of us can help answer? Okay.
Go ahead.
Oh, you have a question? Oh, go ahead.
Works. Can you hear me? Yes.
Yeah.
So initially, there weren't all the scenarios weren't supported yet on Azure regarding the types of workloads that DPM accepts. Will that evolve soon with this new solution on supporting VSS?
If I understand the question correctly, not all the workloads were supported to protect from DPM to Azure, correct? No?
So actually, DPM on Azure.
Oh, DPM on Azure.
has differences regarding DPM on-prem. So will this be on par next?
Yes, I think the answer is yes. We are trying to do them as soon as we can. I think some of the workloads are a little bit more complicated to validate. So we started with SQL. We've started with Hyper-V, file server. But I think SharePoint and Exchange are on the list go do. So I think our plan is to get those done. I would say in the next 3 months is what we're planning to get those done. So, yes, the answer is yes. I think all the workloads that DPM supports today on-premise, we want to protect them in Azure. Any other questions?
So this solution, which is based on script today, will be also available within 3 months, as you were saying, maybe? Because this is what is expected, actually, from long time on Azure, you know.
Yeah, it's been, that's why they're trying to show a sneak preview. I think the ISVM guys also pushed us very hard to build it. Yeah, I think the current schedule for that is Q1 of next year, Q1 calendar next year, so which is Jan to March is the time frame you want to release it. That's for preview, and the general availability will be in the next quarter. So I think we'll have a preview capability early next year, and then the general availability in the second quarter of next year. Anything else? Okay. There's no other sense. I want to thank again my presenters for helping here.
Thank you.
Thank again, Dick, for coming here. Yeah. And thank you guys for session. Please fill out the session code and the survey. That helps all of us come back next time to present again.
Please.
Okay. Thank you.